Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode.
Today I'm joined by another fabulous woman. I'm joined by Ginger. Ginger enjoys pole dancing. She enjoys walking in nature, traveling. She's always wanted a chihuahua. Ginger has got experience working as a stripper, a tarot reader, and a skimpy worker. And she works in the adult industry and is about to start studying law. So thanks so much for joining me today, Ginger.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to start by saying that any question that I have, nothing, there is no judgment layered in it at all. It is purely because I'm just really, really nosy. So... And this is what I love about the podcast. I get to ask questions that in polite company I would normally not, but because for the benefit of the podcast, I've got to ask. Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. So tell me a little bit about, so you started out working as a stripper and a tarot reader about 9 years ago?
So I've been tarot reading just for a few years, but I started in the adult industry, yeah, about 9 years ago.
How did you get started in that?
Well, I was broke. I was living out of home and I wasn't speaking to my family. So I the opportunity to move back home just wasn't there. And I was living with a partner who did not have a job either. I had just attempted to move to the UK. I got there and I realized that I really didn't want to live there at all. And then I came back home and I'd spent all of my savings traveling like trying it out. So I came home, I moved in with my partner at the time, and I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? I don't really have the time to like wait to be interviewed and then go through the whole process of getting a like quote regular job.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really that keen on it either. I had just, before I moved to the UK, I had been working in a hospital as a food services attendant, and that really turned me off employment work pretty much forever. So I wasn't really keen to have a regular job, and I didn't really have the time either. So I did a few bits and pieces to make money, and then I ended up just applying to a strip club in, well, I applied to all the clubs in Brisbane, and then I just worked at the first one that I got an interview at, and I walked in, I had my CV that they didn't even look at.
They weren't interested in your university qualifications?
Not at all.
Funny that.
And I remember walking down the steps into the club, and the manager was there, and there was an applicant. I think they were interviewing people for bar staff positions at the same time as well, and there were two different applications, and he said, which job are you after? Did you want to, were you coming to be a bartender or to be a dancer? And I was like, just whatever really. And then he was like, okay. And then he like threw the bartender like application form like off the bench, and he was like, don't worry about that. And I was like, what? Obviously now, like, I realized that they would much rather have a dancer than a bartender, because like,
you think it might be the dancers that gets people in the clubs rather than the drinks?
Well, I mean, a lot of customers will say that they're just there to drink, but at the end of the day, they're not.
Like, there's a lot of places where you can buy drinks, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And sat me down, interviewed. I didn't do an audition or anything. He just said, you can start tonight if you want. And something told me not to. I was like, I'll come back tomorrow night. It was a Thursday night. And I'm really glad that I didn't, because I know clubs in Brisbane get really quiet during the week, especially in Fortitude Valley. And I know now that if I had worked the Thursday, I probably wouldn't have continued. But I worked the Friday, and I think I made like $500 or something. And now, as an experienced dancer, that's not a lot of money to make on a Friday night, but at the time I was like, oh my god, this is incredible, like, I've never made,
it's a week's wage.
Yeah, but like, keep in mind that this is like before tax, before super, and we still like, we have to pay for like sick leave and like annual leave, so it's not like
but even so, that's a decent amount to make in one night, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose that at this time, my like work-related expenses weren't really high. I wasn't really buying the same quality makeup that I do now. So I wasn't spending as much to work, and I wasn't getting my nails done or anything. So to me, like, that was a lot of money, and like the profit margin was really high. So I came home and I was like, I'm definitely
I'm in.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's so much to unpack just in that little intro. Firstly, I guess, and it's not related to what the topic that we're going to be talking about, but I love that you gave it a shot and you went to the UK and it wasn't right, so you came home again.
Yeah, I got there and I realised that I'd had this big idea in my head of what I wanted it to be and it didn't match up to that. And it just felt wrong. I just knew that I wasn't in the right place. And having more life experience now, because I have PTSD, I know that I often get like the urge to run away. And I realized then that that's what I was doing at the time. And it wasn't really a sustainable thing. It was just like an impulsive thing that like my mental illness had gotten me to do.
Yeah. But I guess something that we hear often is, well, I'd really quite like to go and live somewhere else, but what if I fail? Well, what if you fail? Like, come home again.
Yeah.
And you weren't talking to your family, but you still could come home again.
So, yeah.
Like, kind of the what's the worst that can happen type of thing. How did it feel like making the decision? So you went to uni, you kind of followed the stages to go and potentially have what you called a real job, and then you needed something, you kind of needed cash quick, right?
Yeah, so I did a law degree, Bachelor of Fine Arts, which I suppose I don't even know if that's counted as a real job either. So I struggled a bit finding work in that sector, leaving uni. It was the year after the year after I graduated that I went to the UK, so 2015, and I'd pretty much only worked hospitality jobs up until then. Like, I worked at McDonald's, I'd done Christmas casual things in retail, and then I worked at the hospital. And then
the same thing that most of us do when we're teenagers.
Yeah. Nothing hectic, but yeah, there weren't really many jobs available for me. And I also thought that I could find my chances of finding a writing job in the UK could be a little bit greater, but that didn't really work out either. So, yeah.
So you came home. When you were kind of going, well, I need to eat and I need a roof over my head, so I'm going to need to find a way to make money. How did it feel making the choice to apply for a job in a strip club?
I'm not sure. It wasn't really anything that I'd considered before. And then just one day I thought, like, what if I just do this for a few weeks or like a few months, just while I get like my shit together, while I get everything sorted out.
So my experience of it is only what I've seen in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So how skeezy was the interview?
Not too bad. It was pretty tame. To be honest, I don't really remember
kind of in that
any
then.
Of it. Yeah. I think they just kind of asked me, have you done this before? There's not really a whole lot that you need to ask, really. It's not really an interview. It's more so like them giving you like a tour around the club and the rundown of what the industry's like. So I'd say it's more of like an orientation than an interview, because they're not really asking you too many questions. They don't really care.
So what is that rundown of what the industry's like?
It was just kind of like, so this is what you do. Like, you sell dancers. You go on stage, but you don't need to worry about that just yet because you're new, which was a lie. It was like, you go on stage. Also, it's completely different in every single club. So no matter where you're working, like, you're going to have this run through. They're going to explain to you like what the stage roster is like, what to do with tips, and like where lap dances are, how much you can charge for lap dances. And yeah, I think it was just him explaining the industry and explaining ways that you can make more money, obviously, because that benefited the club, because it was a club that took a cut.
Yeah.
So he kind of told me bits and pieces, like, always like ask for an extension on a booking, because you're going to make like, the goal is to be in the lap room as long as possible. You don't want to be out on the floor. Like, it was just random things like that, trying to like run me through how to make as much money as possible.
So you said that you were working as a dancer.
Yeah.
Had you done anything like that? You know, so I'm kind of thinking about 9 years ago, and there was DVDs going, because we had DVDs 9 years ago, there were DVDs going around like Carmen Electra striptease and, you know, Fit to Burn and those types of things. Had you done anything like that before? No.
Absolutely nothing. I had danced in my bedroom. I had danced like in a nightclub, but yeah. I had never even danced in front of an audience or anyone else, really. Even like when I was in school, I was in like the choir for school musicals and stuff like that. I hadn't like properly performed. And so it was a big challenge. It was very
like how did you know what to do?
Well, I did have one or two girls who kind of like ran me through a few like little like moves, but to be honest, I mean, I feel as though it's changed a little bit now when it comes to like the performance in the industry. But when I first started, it was more simple. You don't really have to like perform so much on like the pole. As long as you act sexy and like you move around the pole in a sensual way, you don't really need to do anything dramatic.
But even that, I mean, at 20, that's still challenging. And to do that when you like your only performance has been in a school choir, to then start acting sexy on a pole in front of a group of strangers, that actually make, I think I might break out in hives thinking about that. So like, where do you start?
I don't know. I just like, to be honest, it's all a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
I just kind of like watched what everyone else was doing and just sort of copied that, just like moving slowly around the pole. And then I had someone like eventually teach me how to climb a pole.
Yeah.
Which I learned a few bits and pieces when I first started, and then I actually didn't do any pole for the first 7 years. And it's only been recently that I've actually been like dancing on the pole. You just find ways to like move slowly, and like it becomes more natural the longer you do it.
Yeah, because I mean, there's nothing sexier than the bruises that you get from pole
dancing. Oh yeah, they're horrible.
They really are. So you got started, and I have to ask, how was it taking your clothes off in front of people?
Oh my god, the first customer that I had, like who booked me, it was actually a customer who normally booked the new girls, which like this customer was fine, but normally that's...
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it. Yeah. Seems like there's some alarm bells that should be going off there.
It's normally a huge red flag if a customer goes for the new girls, because they know that they don't have boundaries set and they know that they can get away with a little more because they're a bit more shy and they haven't built that kind of resilience yet. And so, but this customer was great, didn't have any issues, so I got really lucky there. He booked me for I think 10 minutes, and I remember standing in front of him and he's sitting down like waiting for me to like take my clothes off, and I'm just shaking so much that I can't even like touch the, like I can't even grasp like my bikini top to take it off. And he's watching me and he's like, it's fine, like just sit with me for 10 minutes
and let's have a chat.
Yeah.
Okay, he does sound like a good guy.
Yeah, he actually came in, I was at that club for 6 months, and he did come in a few different times, and like we would always like have a chat, and like sometimes he would book me again. And he was like, I remember your first lap dance. I was like, I don't want to talk about it.
Trying to erase that from my memory. So it got easier?
Yeah, it got easier. It took a little while, but I was a very shy person, so it was completely something that was out of my comfort zone. It took a lot of like mental work and yeah.
Yeah.
Especially after the first few weeks, I had decided to go sober for the first time. And so like being in the club, something that was so challenging for me, and being sober, and I was someone who had been drinking heavily since I was 18, that were two very big things that I had to like grapple with at the same time. Yeah. But I think in a way getting sober made it easier for me, because I was more in my head and I was more aware of what was happening. Yeah.
Oh.
I mean like more in my head as in like more aware of what was happening around me and more conscious.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, no, if I'm running things over and over in my head, that is not good. Oh, that was my next question. Did you find that alcohol helped? But not if you went sober, so.
Yeah, I've been through phases. There's been times where I have drunk in the club and times where I haven't, but I've been completely sober forever for the past few years. Well, I'll have a few drinks a year, but nothing like a full night of drinking. But yeah, I often found that when I did drink, it was when I didn't really want to be there. And I knew that like I had to like work on some things like mentally and emotionally to go to work, because if you're like, I knew that if I was using that as a crutch, it wasn't good for me to be in the club. Because it's like, if you're using that to get through it, then the industry is not for you.
It's not for you, yeah.
But then I always say that, and then I think about, like, I mean, it can be a bit insensitive to say that too, because there are people who are like in the industry who are in the industry to pay for, you know, like substances, and that I don't really want to invalidate that either.
Oh, that wasn't how I heard it. So
okay.
Yeah. No, I totally understood what you meant. So you said that before, you said that you have PTSD and so you have the urge to run. How did you stay that first night?
In the club?
Yeah. If you were, you know, you spoke about being really nervous and shaking, and did you have the urge to run?
I thought about it. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And over and over, I was thinking like, why am I here? I was really lucky. There were these two beautiful girls that were sisters, and I should send them a message because we're still like in contact now. We still like follow each other on social media, but they were Serbian girls, and they were so beautiful. They took me under their wing because they saw how like nervous and how like shy I was. They were like, okay, we need to have a talk to her because she's not okay. And they kept on saying like, you need to wait until like 11 or midnight. Like that's when people will start coming in. At least wait until then. And I spent the first few hours being like,
I don't know if I can wait until midnight. Yeah. Midnight's a really long way away.
And they kept on being like, hold on, like don't give up, don't go home, like just wait it out. And then so I did, and then yeah, everything worked out. So
yeah, again, going back to the movies, it portrays, you kind of got two people backstage. You've got the people like the sisters who you just spoke about, and then you've got the people who are like catty and don't want you there because you're a threat to their tips or their dancers. How does that match with reality?
To be honest, I don't think those are really that realistic, even like saying that I did have that experience. But most girls are just indifferent, if that makes sense. Like there'll be a few girls who are like catty if you mess with them or if you directly get in their way. But it's rare for someone to like directly like attack or get angry at someone who hasn't personally done something. Most people are just kind of indifferent, especially because the industry has such a high turnover rate. Like there are girls like coming and going like to clubs all the time.
Yeah.
You'll find that like the friendlier people are normally like newer to the industry. And we've all had experiences in the club where like we'll get along with someone really well, or like we'll think that we've made a new friend, and then like you go to work next week and they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of girls get into like, they don't make friends with anyone because they've, you know, one, they're there to make money.
Yeah.
And two, like they've kind of been like friendship heartbroken, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no point creating a connection if you're not going to be here next week.
Yeah.
So, and that was, again, so there is a high turnover?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was. I think since COVID, it's been a bit different. But, yeah, I think now that things are becoming like a bit more back to normal, it also depends on the time of year. Whenever it's the slow season, people move around a lot because they think that like the club's stopping.
Grass is always greener.
Yeah, for sure.
Were you working in strip clubs during COVID?
No. So I was in Perth when everything shut down, and because it like adult industry is always the first to go when something like this happens. So I managed to get on Centrelink, and I just pretty much stayed on home for the whole lockdown. Yeah. I wasn't really given the option to work. One of the clubs in Perth that I wasn't working at was able to open. They found like a loophole.
Yeah.
But I wasn't working at that venue, so I kind of stayed indoors for months.
Yeah. So you did that for, you've done that for quite some time.
Worked in the industry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have been some of the highlights of working in the industry?
I suppose being able to travel.
That is true. It is universal, right?
Do you mean within Australia or outside of Australia?
Well, I'd say, yeah, within Australia you could easily go around and pick up work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some cities that are a bit more picky when it comes to who they let work for them. I've worked in every capital city in Australia, but I know a lot of people that have been turned away from clubs in Melbourne, and I actually haven't worked on the Gold Coast because there's three clubs there. One club won't take travelling girls. The second club takes half of your earnings, and I think that's disgusting.
Oh, wow.
And the third club turned me away, and because even though like I do make money, I feel as though there's nothing like on paper that would really hinder me from making money. I mean, like, I'm fit, I look after myself, but sometimes because I don't have like massive boobs, and because I'm not like super super skinny, like some clubs have really old school.
Okay, you really are skinny.
I mean, like tall and, you know, like slender, I guess.
Oh no, you are.
Okay.
I'll pay that you don't have big boobs, but you are very slim.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
I think I just mean like because I mean
you don't fit the old school stereotype of what. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like my body can be a little bit confusing for some people because I mean like I'm small up top, but I'm like curvy down bottom, if that makes sense. So some people don't necessarily like that, even though I'm still like I can still make money. Like I remember after I worked at that club in Brisbane for 6 months, I moved to Melbourne and I lived in Melbourne for a few months. And then since I still had my working visa for the UK, I thought I might as well go to the UK and like work at the clubs there, see what it's like. I did that and I went to the States for a bit, had a holiday, and I came home and I went back to my club in Melbourne. And I'd just been in the States for 6 weeks, so of course I'd put on a little bit of weight. And then I got full rostered, which is a thing that's very like Melbourne specific. If you work at a club and then all of a sudden you go to send in your roster and they tell you, like, sorry, the roster's full, there's no space for you, they're pretty much firing you, but like in a pseudo polite way. And I know, like, well, I don't know for sure, but I'm highly, like, it's pretty obvious that it was because I'd put on a little bit of weight. But the thing was, I made a lot of money that weekend. I made, like, more money than I did on an average night when I had been working there before. And it's just really silly how...
I have it on good authority from quite a few men that men are not that picky.
Yeah.
If there is a naked or semi-naked woman in front, they're happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to make them happy. Yeah, and that's just terrible, being fat shamed. Yeah. When you first started this, how did you feel telling people that you were doing this work now?
I was actually really upfront and really like confident about it. I was very when there were situations where I felt like my safety could be compromised,
yeah,
I was a bit more like shy about it. I just made something up, especially like talking to like random men.
Yeah.
I just say something else. But I was very like vocal and upfront about it, which like, yeah, I look back now and I'm like, wow, I really didn't care.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Did you have any negative experiences from family or friends? Or was that one of the benefits of not speaking to your family?
Well, I ended up telling my family. I thought, look, well, things aren't great at the moment.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm ruining
Now's
anything.
Now's a great time to tell them.
I told them like within a few weeks and they were not happy. Like my parents, it's a bit complicated. My dad pretends he doesn't know. He pretends that I'd do something else, but my mum has been very supportive since in like the years after that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, look, I can kind of get where your dad's coming from, but it's awesome that you didn't have the negative experience of, you know, them disowning you or anything like that.
Well, there were a few weeks there where I was like, I don't know. But yeah, it's been fine.
Sorry, I think I cut you off. Highlights from doing it?
Oh, right, yeah.
One of us got off on a tangent somewhere.
Yeah, being able to travel. And I feel like I've learned a lot about myself, because the thing is, when it comes to stripping and like working in the club, you're dealing with sexuality and you're dealing with money, which are two massive things that are very hard to comprehend and very hard to, you know, find confidence in yourself. And it's allowed a lot of my own like beliefs and my own insecurities to come to the surface, which has helped me work on them. And I know that there are a lot of things that I have learned about myself and that I've been able to work through that I wouldn't have been able to outside of the industry.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. Like, they're two topics that women are very much taught that you don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And having to negotiate money, again, like, oh, we just don't talk. Like, I feel uncomfortable talking about money, and you want me to talk about money while taking my clothes off. Could I make this more difficult? So, wow, that must have been really challenging.
Yeah, especially someone who didn't really, who found it really hard, like talking about and like asking for money. And also I hadn't really like thought of myself as like sexy, or like, I hadn't really like thought of myself in that way. And so like, it also in a way allowed me to perceive myself like through the male gaze and become more aware of that, and allowed me to harness that in ways that worked for me rather than like ways that worked against me.
Or worked for them. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So any lowlights?
Yeah. There's always people that show their true colors. It was really interesting. I remember I heard from my best friend about a lot of people who had been like talking, like saying things about me after I started saying that I was going off the rails. And the funny thing was, I was worse before I started streaming. I was like, my life was a lot milder. Like when I was getting naked in the club, I was doing worse things before. So I found that really amusing, but also like not knowing like if people are going to judge you, and also like being fetishized as well. I mean, like I've had issues. I mean, I've got an amazing partner now, but I've had issues like with dating before, because like men, they want the fantasy of like dating a stripper, but they don't
actually want you to be a stripper.
Yeah. And also my first partner, who I had been supporting, got very like, he ended up stealing my money. And because like money gets involved in so many like random different ways, like that can ruin like the relationships that you have and the people that you have around you.
So I wondered how partners would go, and with the idea of other men seeing their partner take their clothes off.
Well, to be honest, none of the relationships that I've, like the proper relationships that I've been in, my partners haven't really had an issue. There have been other things that like related to the industry that have come up, but nothing to do with like jealousy or anything like that. But I'm very picky with the people that I date as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look exceptionally young. So before we started recording, I was just, you know, being really nosy and saying, oh, how old were you when you started? And I'm like, how old are you now? Oh my God. So you see in the show notes that Ginger looks like she's about 19, and she started when she's 20 and been going for 9 years. So you can maybe do the maths. Has that had positive or negative impact for you?
Do you mean like the fact that I look young?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I first started, because I was 20, and even now.
You must have looked about 12.
Yeah, I had people who refused to book me because they thought I was underage. And like, to put into perspective, when I met my like current partner's parents last year, he's younger than me. His mother said to him afterwards, I'm a little concerned. She looks really young. She looks 18. Why are you dating an 18-year-old?
How did they respond to what you do?
I don't think they took him seriously at first.
Okay.
I think they were like, no, you're not dating a stripper. Yeah. But I haven't had any issues. We were actually on a show called Love Don't Judge, and we had like, I didn't interview her, but she was interviewed like about her perspective regarding this. And yeah, I think like her main concern is like, when, if I'm working in the industry, how am I going to have like have kids and balance that? But I've worked with plenty of women who have children, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. Yeah.
And no, I mean, look, some of the women who I know who have worked in strip clubs, they have done it after they've had children because when then their partner can be at home looking after the kids and they can work in the evening. And they'd certainly make a lot more money doing that than they do night film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they've kind of said similar things that you don't need to be able to get up on the pole. You just kind of writhe around it. So,
yeah.
So Love Don't Judge. Tell me about that.
Well, I was contacted in, I think it was January of this year, to be on. I was asked if I had a partner, and I said yes. And they were like, "Well, we would like to like interview you and see how like people talk about how people have judged you for the relationship that you have, because you obviously have a job that a lot of people don't really understand."
Mm. And so, with that, what are some of the common misconceptions that you would hear?
In regards to dating or the club?
Oh, well, I meant the club, but feel free to share dating ones as well.
I think there are so many, I don't even know where to begin, but I think there's the perception that like we make all this money and like we don't pay tax and that like we're just like living it up. And that, like, the work is a lot easier than it is when it's actually really arduous work. Like, it's a lot of emotional labor as well. Particularly me, I was going through a really, like, rough period last year and I still had to go to work every night. And it's like you've got to pump yourself up and make yourself be, like, the happy, like, entertainer who's looking after everyone else. And you've also got to do a lot of, like, deal with a lot of trauma dumping from clients as well. And still, like you can leave a booking with someone who's just told you like the most like horrifying story or like the most heartbreaking thing, and then you've got to leave that and be like, okay, I'll think about that later, and then you've got to go out like smiling and like laughing and being like funny and like joyful to the next person, even like no matter what you're going through, like you've got to like put on a smile and like just use as much energy as you can to be
I didn't even think about the vicarious trauma issues. And yeah, I mean, you hear about that sort of from hairdressers and people oversharing, but it hadn't occurred to me that you would be experiencing that as well.
Yeah. Well, the way that I see it, strip clubs are the most socially acceptable form of therapy for men, because I mean, like, not many men want to go to like professional therapy. A lot of them will go on a night out and they'll end up like talking to us and telling us their problems and kind of like using us as like a space for therapy. So we often, like,
awesome.
There's a reason why.
Except you don't have skills in that area, you know, like you're not trained in that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I did get my like coaching certification. So yeah. I do know bits and pieces, but I'm obviously not like a legally trained like psychologist.
Yeah.
And I know that there are definitely girls in the industry who have a lot less knowledge of that than I do. And when not equipped, I feel as though like it would be really useful for like strippers to go through some kind of mandatory training, but we just kind of have to deal with all the trauma dumping and find a way to, you know, give them the best that we can.
How do you look after yourself from that?
I'm very conscious of energy, and I'm very like sensitive to energy as well, so I've had to come up with a lot of strategies over the years in order to like cleanse energy from me and have stronger boundaries. So I have a practice where before work I'll like visualize like myself in a bubble and like so that I can imagine different like thoughts and feelings from other people like bouncing off me so that I don't absorb them. And then when I get home from work I'll like have a shower and like imagine everything like coming off me. Yeah. And also remembering that nothing has anything to do with me.
Yeah. Still, that's a lot for you to take. Like I was kind of thinking that you would have to fend off drunk guys who kind of want to get their hands all over you.
Well,
there's that. Yeah. But you know, that actually feels less difficult than having to hold space for people in that kind of industry where you don't have capacity to hold space for them, and you've got 10 minutes in a room.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because a lot of customers will say, like, if they book a longer booking and they just want to sit and talk for like half an hour or even a few hours, it's funny because they'll be like, let's just like hang out and talk. It'll be like the easiest money that you make. It's like, let's just like hang out. You don't have to worry about the dancing.
Dude, can I just take my clothes off? That'll be so
much easier. And I'm like, I would rather dance for 3 hours straight, you know?
Yep, I feel ya. The easiest money you'll ever make.
I don't know about that. And it's always like at the end of the night too, and you're like, I can't keep my eyes open and like smiling at you for that long.
Yeah. I've got an espresso martini with no martini and I'm just straight espresso. Yeah. Are there issues with people who think that all strippers are full-service sex workers?
I mean, yes, because there are some clients who will come into the club and think that they are getting the full service. But and some women in the industry might get a bit offended about it. But it doesn't have – I mean, it's more of an issue with, clients who have, like, a bit of a language barrier or have – are used to the clubs, I mean, like the brothels where they're from, looking more like strip clubs.
Yeah.
And they get their wires crossed and it's a bit confused, a bit confusing. There have been times where like customers have tried to like pursue that, but there's, as far as my experience has gone, like I've always been safe. I've always been able to get out of there.
So with that, looking at your safety, when you're in rooms to give lap dances, is there like a bouncer in there with you, or like how do you make sure that you're safe?
So it's different in every single state,
yeah,
which is really is really annoying. So in Queensland, every time that you're getting naked, there has to be a controller in the room. So when you get when someone buys a lap dance in Queensland, they go into this big room full of people giving lap dances and there's someone in the corner or in the middle or like at some point who is watching over everyone. And even in Queensland, if you book a private room or like a champagne room or something like that, even if it's just you and the customer, there has to be someone watching.
Yeah.
That's just the way things legally work in Queensland. But other states, in Melbourne, everything's very like you're for your own. So like everything's like, the customer will give you the cash directly and then you will go to the room with the customer. In Perth, it depends which club you're at and which booking you do, but you're typically in there by yourself and they'll normally be like wait staff like coming around and like security just like poking their head in every now and then. But it's different everywhere you go. Sometimes there's someone there, sometimes there's not. And if there's not someone there, there'll normally be people wandering around making sure that, like, nothing's
that
going
okay.
on. Yeah.
Because there's kind of two sides to that. One is when you've got those people that just want to sit and chat and tell you their life story. How is that when they've got, like, a bouncer in the corner type of thing? But also, how safe do you feel if it is just you and a customer in a room by yourself?
I mean, I feel safe now. And also because I'm a lot more experienced customers know that.
Yeah.
And the customers who are a bit sketchy, like they can tell that I've got strong boundaries. They can tell that I'm experienced. They won't go near me.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And do you, like, can you pick and choose customers?
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to like your own like decision. I mean, if you're in a space where you just need to make whatever money you can, like
you're going to be less picky.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, no one, as far as my experience has gone, I haven't been forced to give it like a lap dance that I didn't want to, but I don't want to like speak on behalf of everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. No, 100%. You can only speak about your experiences. So yeah, definitely. And then, so you've left working in strip clubs and now you're doing skimpy work.
Yes. Well, I'm still working a little bit in the strip club here and there. Like sometimes I'll have like a regular or like a skimpy customer who wants to book me and I'll go into the club just to do that booking. I'm very lucky with the club that I work at that they let me do that.
Yeah.
Because usually you have to go in and work the whole shift and like pay their house fee.
Yeah.
But I'm still hoping to do like a few like stripper trips a year, but not...
Okay, what's a stripper trip?
Oh, just like traveling somewhere and like right, working okay. for the week because I really like working in
so
Darwin.
It's like a working holiday type thing where you're doing this to... pay for you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a holiday for me anymore because I've worked everywhere. I go to Melbourne a lot and I don't really do any holiday stuff there. I pretty much just work, but it's nice to like mix it up and
Look, I think the term working holiday is an oxymoron anyway. Yeah. So definitely. Do you do things like private parties, box parties, things like that where you go out to different venues?
I don't really. They're not really my thing. Also, now that I'm not in the club anymore, I don't, like, the thought of entertaining people privately is not really...
Drunk men at a party. Yeah,
I'm like, I don't think so, not that. Today.
I think I'm going to paint my nails. Why did you choose to shift over to skimpy work?
Well, it was a few different reasons, because I was mostly working in Melbourne, and so I was, like, flying over every second week to work there. It was a combination of things. I mean, I felt like every time I worked in the club, I just got sick and I felt like my body was telling me to stop. I also, like, I didn't really have the passion for it as I used to. And I also found that a lot of clubs were, with the recession and everything, they were trying to take more and more money from us and limiting the amount of money that we were profiting from each shift. And I felt like it just wasn't worth it financially anymore with the clubs choosing to, you know, like, take so much more money. And I also got really tired of going to bed at 7 a.m. I wanted to get my days back, so,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is there a lot of skimpy work around in WA?
There's quite a bit, yeah. And, like, there's pubs, like, all around Perth, and then you can, like, travel up north and, like, down south take, like, jobs there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that you mentioned was work-related expenses.
So yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I'm a bit high maintenance now, so my worker-related expenses are pretty high. But, like, because we work in the outdoor industry, we're often, like, we have to play up to, like, certain beauty standards. For instance, like, makeup, false eyelashes or eyelash extensions, like, lipstick, nails. Your, like, body, like, as per industry standard, like, has to look conventionally, you know. It costs a lot of money to look, to fit into, like, industry standards. So,
and it looks like a lot of work as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I found, like, when I was in the club. If I was working every weekend, it was like I was always going to appointments during on my days off to, like, maintain it. Like, I'd have, like, nail appointment, like, hair appointment, like, this and that. And I'm like, I'm not getting paid for this. In fact, like, I'm paying for it.
It's costing me this much money to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, I mean, you've got to factor in, like, house fees and, like, travel expenses if you travel for work. You know, like, advertising. I mean, I saw something on social media the other day about how strip clubs have, like, offloaded their, like, advertising and their marketing onto the dancers themselves.
Oh, wow.
So it used to be clubs advertising, yeah. But now, like, most clubs will, like, convince the girls to, like set up a strippogram and, like, post on Instagram and get the customers in when that's actually their job. So you have to
pay to be there, and then you also have to organize getting your customers there as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't feel okay.
Yeah. This is what I mean. Like, I just feel like a lot of, like, clubs have a lot higher expectations for us, and they're also, like, taking more of our money, and I was just like, this is not how it should be.
Is it unionized?
No, not really. That's a bit of that's an interesting question, because I know, like, there have been people who have attempted to unionize, and there have been unions on and off, but they're not really as well, like, they're not really as regulated.
That's what I was wondering. Like, you spoke about in Brisbane, where there's kind of stronger regulations around somebody has to be in the room with you at all time, that type of thing. How regulated is it here in Perth? And I guess I'm also wondering, if there was a union, would they just hire girls that weren't part of the union?
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of women in the industry are afraid to, like, speak up or object to certain things, because they know that strip club owners and, like, managers treat us like we're disposable, and they're like, well, there's such a high turnover, like, they'll just be another girl coming through. And so a lot of girls are, like, scared to speak up because they're, like, they might lose their job, and because they've become so reliant on the income, they don't want to be left out in the cold.
Yeah, and I mean, that's certainly the picture that I was getting from what wasn't an interview. You turned up, are you prepared to be a dancer? I know obviously that was quite a while ago and things may have changed, but you turned up, are you prepared to be a dancer? Great, can you start at 8? So
yeah,
like it's, well, sure, if you don't want to do it, that's fine. There's 5 girls who are waiting who are happy to come and take your place.
Yeah.
Trying to unionise that would be really difficult. And so you're going to go from that to law?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm hoping to study law part-time, so I'll still, like, be in the industry and doing bits and pieces. I'm actually going to be working a lot over the next few months to, like, save up to... So yeah. I've got, like, a few, like, trips planned, like, work trips planned between now and then, but I am hoping to do, like, a few skimpy shifts a week and, like, some OnlyFans stuff while I'm studying as well so that I can afford, like, to...
Oh, my goodness, OnlyFans, that could be a whole episode all by itself. So that's a big shift to go from... to go from stripping for 9 years to law. What, I guess, why now?
I'm not sure. This is something that I've been trying to, like, answer myself. Like, I've been asking this question, like, over and over in my brain, and I can't really comprehend it. It was just, like, something that, like, it clicked for me. And because I've always been, like, very, like, vocal, like, in the clubs that I've been working at about, like, rights in the industry and, like, unfair treatment. And I think that kind of, that sense of justice has, like, powered me to study law. And also, I'm a Libra, and, like, it's just, that's what,
just
like,
yeah.
Yeah,
fair enough.
It's, like, the most common job for a Libra. So I was like, okay, I might as well stay true to my roots.
So I'm just going to lean into it. And going back a little bit, you spoke about coaching. And you spoke about doing some stripper coaching or industry coaching. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I actually started a stripper coaching business during COVID. It was, you know how you said before about, like, maintaining, like, energy and not letting it get to me? Because I knew that every time I'd taken a break from stripping, even if it was for a few weeks... I'd never really taken a long break from stripping, but every time that I was away from the club, I always felt so much better emotionally and spiritually. And I knew when the clubs closed for COVID and, like, we were all locked down, I was thinking to myself, okay, whatever I do now, I need to make sure that I maintain this when I go back to the club, because I'm, like, it's going,
yeah,
I'm going to fall apart when I go back to work. So I was thinking, I ended up finding ways to, like, maintain a positive mindset and work through negative emotions and, like, negative energy. It was more of a, like, a personal mission for myself. And then I ended up creating, like, a little business out of it.
And how does that, like, how does that go with the other people who were part of that?
What do you mean?
Like, do you find that the other women who were part of that, you know, who were your coaching customers or coaching clients, do you find that they're receptive to kind of, like, that they're experiencing similar needs of going around mindset or dealing with the vicarious trauma, those types of things?
Yeah, but also at the same time, people also need to be willing to change on, like, on every level as well. I found that, like, I was helping some people and they weren't really integrating because there were some, like, subconscious things that they weren't willing to work through.
Yeah, I call those the yes but people.
Yeah, a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. You just think, oh, just give me a wall, I can just bang my head against.
Yes.
Is there an average amount of time that people, and I know that you kind of said that some, that it's quite transient and people come and go. Is there an average amount of time that you think that the people would stay in the industry?
That's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah, I thought that as I was asking it.
I feel like there's a lot less longevity these days because I feel like in my first few years of dancing, there were always people at, like, there were always women at clubs who had been in the industry for over a decade, like 15, 20 years.
Wow.
And those kind of dances are few and far between. Like, there's a lot of clubs that I've worked at in the last year or two and I'm like, how am I the most experienced one there. Like, I know I've been dancing for longer than average, but there's always that one, like, who's been kicking around for years and years. And I'm like, people just aren't staying in the industry as long. And I feel as though it's not as, like, sustainable, like, financially as it used to be, especially, like, with the cost of living.
And so if there are, I mean, you've just said that you're not sure that it's as sustainable as it used to be, but if there are, well, whether it's men or women who are experienced, who are interested in looking at this as a career option, what are some of the thoughts that you would share with them?
To be honest, I don't really like giving advice to people who, like, are new to the industry or hoping to go into it, because I feel like I learned so much diving into it headfirst, having no idea. And that's where you build that grit. That's where you build that, like, that trust in yourself. And you need that in the industry. You need to have a backbone, and you need to, like, go through some really, like, hard things and learn a lot of the hard lessons by yourself.
So I've heard you talk about backbone, grit, resilience, boundaries. It doesn't sound like an easy way to make money.
No.
In the movies, it looks like an easy way to make money.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's sometimes there are nights that, like, money will be really easy, but you've got to go through a lot of, like, really tough nights as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And if there are people who are listening to this who have a friend or a relative who want to get into the industry, what advice would you have for them as to how to respond to that?
As in, so someone that they know is going to go in the industry. I would just say that you support them, and that, like tell them that, I don't know, I think all you need to say is that you support them. Like, you don't need to make a big deal about it or anything. Just know that, like, you're there for them and that you're thinking of them.
And is there anything else that we have sort of started talking about and then one of us has gone off on a tangent and we didn't get back to that you want to add? Or anything that we didn't start talking about and you want to add?
I'm not sure. There's so much to talk about in the industry. Like, I've seen so much.
What's kept you in it for 9 years?
I think it was the fact that I was, like, traveling and able to, because I know that if I'd stayed in Brisbane, I probably wouldn't have been in the industry as long. But I know, like, because I was given the opportunity to, like, travel and mix it up, it made it become less boring. And it was, like, still able to be exciting. It's very, like, once you're in it, like, you get used to the lifestyle and you get used to, like, the way that it is. And
I'm not sure I'd ever get used to not going to bed until 7 o'clock in the morning. But I'll take your word for it.
Well, the thing is, there used to be some clubs in Australia that would be open, that would do day shift.
Yeah.
And you could do, like, work there during the daytime. But since COVID, that's just...
Hasn't really happened. Yeah. Has there been any other changes since COVID? So I've just got this mental picture, and it's really inappropriate, but I've got this mental picture of you kind of dancing behind, like, a riot shield, you know? It's like,
oh my God.
Sorry, you know, because that's what they had for the checkout operators and that kind of thing to try and protect them from COVID.
Yeah.
I'm sensing maybe not.
We did have to wear masks. That was really annoying.
Oh my goodness.
That
must have been very sexy.
Yeah. But the thing was, you didn't have to wear lipstick. Oh, I still can't not do lipstick.
I still do it anyway.
Because it's like we were allowed to, like, move the masks to drink, and it's like, you know. But the benefit was if it was a really long night, you could yawn and no one would be able to know.
There's always a silver lining. Yeah.
Yeah, but after COVID, I think, like, the biggest change, I don't know what it was, but I think it was just, like, everyone being home during quarantine and either, like, reevaluating what they wanted to do with themselves and, like, having more of a, like, why not, like, I'm only going to live once attitude, or them spending so much time, like, on social media, because I know that there were a lot of, like, strippers on TikTok and, like, people were consuming a lot of, like, stripper-related content during COVID. There was an influx of, like, very new girls. Like,
total... Really? Wow. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, like, I still see it now. I've got a TikTok and I've posted stripper stuff on there before, but there's a lot of like out of context, like money counting. I have a YouTube channel and I used to post a lot of stripper vlogs and I would like talk about my night and I'd count the money at the end. But I found like there's a lot of money counts on TikTok and they don't talk about the night and they don't provide context to the money that they've made. And that creates a bit of a misunderstanding. And I'm sure these people don't mean any harm in it and they don't see the implications that they could be creating. But it glamorized the industry in a way that a lot of people entered the industry. And there's been a big influx of new girls. And I don't think a lot of the really experienced dancers came back after COVID either. So I feel as though the demographic in the club is very like young and there's just a lot of people who have come into the industry with different expectations since COVID. And another thing as well, I don't know what it is, if people like bought poles during COVID or they were just watching like so much, like they got really into like wanting to be a stripper and they were like, okay, like I'm going to go in there and I'm going to like have like a pole routine ready. I'm going to know tricks and this and that. But since COVID, everyone gets up on the pole, like everyone's doing like pole dancing. And before COVID, it was like you'd have a few girls at the club who are really good at the pole. Everyone else would kind of like do a trick here and there and like kind of go around the pole. But since COVID, like everyone is amazing on the pole. And I'm like,
You're setting the bar too high. Let's drop these down a little bit.
And I've heard like a lot of girls complain, like a lot of the older girls complain, I miss the days when we could just like, you know, walk around and look sexy and we'd have money thrown at us. And now like, if you're not like upside down, no one wants to tip you because they're like, but the other girl did that, you know?
Yeah. Good on the other girl.
Yeah.
And pole dancing's really hard.
Yeah.
Anything else that you would like to share before we wrap up?
I think like don't hold yourself back from going after something and like don't let society's like expectations deter you from like trying something out that you've been wanting to try, and don't like think about how like you could be perceived, because I mean if I had chickened out and thought like, oh, I don't know, like people could judge me this and that, I know that like I would be in a very different position to how I am now. And sometimes you've got to risk things to get that reward.
I guess what I've heard is that it's hard work. Like,
yeah.
Do you walk around in the massive heels as well?
Yeah. Well, because I'm short. So yeah. I always have the 8 inches. They're actually not too bad. They're made for you to wear all night. They're not as uncomfortable as normal heels. Yeah. And in fact, when I wear normal heels, I'm like, no, thank you. Yeah. I want to take these off. Also, like, I mean, any shoes that you wear for like 8 hours, your feet are going to get sore.
And that's what I'm thinking. So you're 8 hours on your feet.
Yeah.
And also, which is physically taxing, but emotionally taxing as well.
Yeah.
And also totally messing with your circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
I have 3 children and the thought of going back to no sleep just makes me want to cry. Oh, no. it sounds hard.
Yeah, it's not easy. There's a reason why that like we get paid what we do. Mm. Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be finishing up, so I've got to stop asking questions. But the cost of living is raising, you know, exponentially, and it seems by the day. Has that impacted tips?
That's actually a very interesting question. Something that I have noticed is that because of like inflation and the state of the economy, there are less regular like everyday people going to the club. But the people who do come clubs are generally quieter, but the people who are coming in, because the rich are getting richer, they're spending more money. So I found, especially this year, I mean, I haven't really been in the club very much since June, but for the first 6 months of the year, I noticed that the clubs were really, really quiet, but like people would be coming in and the people who did come in would spend. So like you would make, like you'd scrape the bottom of the barrel one night and then you'd have an amazing night the next night. So it would be like very up and down. Yeah.
Is it better energy if there's more people in there? Is that like asking how long's a piece of string?
I don't particularly think so. Strip club like managers are always trying to get as many people through the door as they want, but I think that's because they want to make money on the bar.
Yeah.
I don't really think it makes much of a difference. It's more quality over quantity. I mean, I've worked plenty of sporting events, and the amount of drunk men in the venue, like after after a football game, has not like made the energy in the room any better.
Yeah. You make a good point. Yeah, fair call. All right, I'm going to stop asking questions now and just say thank you very much for all of your time and letting me ask all of those questions. And I learned so much.
Yeah,
so thank you very much for sharing all of that with me today.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.